Good morning. It's good to see everyone this morning. Thank you, Tracy, for the music. Thank you, everyone else that helped lead worship this morning, for the words of encouragement, the words of song to tune our hearts and help us to praise and to worship our Lord and our Savior. None of us want to live in a world, none of us want to live in a society where the leaders are corrupt. We want to see the rule of law known and followed from the bottom to the top. Yet we all know that there are times and places where the leaders of countries, where the leaders of states and cities have chosen to try to live above the law. In other cases, leaders try to pass laws and exempt themselves, or pass laws that are beneficial to them and no one else, and the citizens are expected to accept that. The thing is in many of those cases, and in times like those, we see things like coups that try to release the citizens from those leaders. It's reasons like these that movies and television shows about law enforcement officers who've gone bad make for good entertainment, because we want to see bad leaders held accountable for their actions. It's why political intrigue in novels and movies is met with the unjust leader getting his due seems like a good piece of news, because we want to live in a society where justice means that the rules are followed by all. Yet, if you see a place where the leaders have begun to act worse than the population in general, you know things have gotten pretty bad. And that's how it was for the nation of Israel. The priests who were called to be the leaders of the people on behalf of God, who was to be their only king, had turned, well, as we'll see this morning, they had turned and were not above corruption. Speaking about the sin of Moses at the second drawing of water from the rock, John Goldingay makes a statement that's particularly interesting. He says this story portrays the ease with which leaders can slip from handling protests with trust to sharing the people's failure. Leaders and people must not take the leaders too absolutely. Leaders are made of the same stuff as their people and fall into the same sins. Moses was able to stumble into his sin at the second drawing of water from the rock, and it wasn't long before the priests were pretty rotten. And people shouldn't put too much trust in their leaders. Oh, not that you can't trust the leaders, but you can't put them on a pedestal either. Peter says that we as the people of God are called to be a kingdom of priests. We're called to be a holy nation. If we're called to be a kingdom of priests, we need to see as priests the difference between the ways that we are supposed to live and the ways that unfortunately too often we can slip into living. We get to look at these two opposite sides of life from the nation of Israel, and we get to see just how bad things had become. As we move from the book of Judges and last week Ruth in the time of Judges to the final judge in the book of Samuel. This morning we'll be in 1 Samuel chapter 2. If you want to turn there, we will begin there and move through chapters 2 and chapter 3 a little bit this morning as we consider how bad things had gotten in the nation of Israel at the end of the period of Judges, and we come to the last judge, a prophetic kid, and see how starkly different he is from the priests at the time. Beginning with verse 12, the writer of Samuel says this. He says, Eli's sons were scoundrels. They had no regard for the Lord. It's pretty bad when you look at the priests and say they're scoundrels. Then skipping down to verse 22, it tells us a little bit more about these two scoundrels. It says, Now Eli was very old and heard about everything his sons were doing to all Israel, and how they slept with the women who served at the entrance to the tent of meeting. So he said to them, Why do you do such things? I hear from all the people about these wicked deeds of yours. No, my sons, the report I hear spreading among the Lord's people is not good. If one person sins against another, God may mediate for the offender. But if one sins against the Lord, who will intercede for them? His sons, however, did not listen to their father's rebuke, for it was the Lord's will to put them to death. And the boy Samuel continued to grow in stature and in favor with the Lord and with the people. And then down to chapter 3, verse 7, the writer continues. He says, Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord. Now you have to understand, this is the third time this is going to, or the fourth time this is going to take place. This isn't the first, second, or even the third. This is the fourth time that these events are going to happen here. It says, Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, and the word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. A third time the Lord called to Samuel, and Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, Here I am, you called me. Then Eli realized that the Lord was calling the boy. So Eli told Samuel, Go and lie down, and if he calls you again, say, Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. So Samuel went and lay down in his place. The Lord came to Samuel and stood there, calling as at the other time, Samuel, Samuel. Then Samuel said, Speak, for your servant is listening. There's a vast difference between the priests and this young boy, Samuel. We look at this, and we've all heard people called bad apples. You know, somebody whose way of life, somebody who makes bad decisions, somebody who lives in ways that are contrary to what is acceptable in society, we talk about them as a bad apple. Well, if you look at these two priests, these two men who were supposed to be men of God, they are what we would term bad apples. They had taken what was supposed to be a very high position and brought it very low. You see, we look at the priest, and there were certain things that a priest was supposed to do. A priest, first of all, was supposed to be a representative of God to men and of men to God. You see, the job of a priest was to come before God and to bring the people's needs and to bring the people's requests and to bring the people's lives before God on their behalf. You see, and these two boys weren't doing that. They were called to teach the people what it meant to live for God. As representatives of God to men, they were supposed to be teaching the people what it meant to live godly lives. And part of that was supposed to start with the way they lived their own lives. And it's not because they were supposed to be better people. It was simply because they were called to live by a higher standard. If you read through the book of Leviticus, what you'll find is that the requirements for the priests were a step above the requirements for the other people, for holiness and purity. And not because they were better people, not because they somehow had earned the right, simply that's the way they were called to live. And they were called to live that way so that people could see what it was meant to be to live a godly life. And then they were supposed to teach the people. They were supposed to take the words that Moses had spoken and Moses had written that God had given to them, and they were supposed to learn them, and then they were supposed to turn around and they were supposed to teach the people and say, this is what God says, and this is how God calls us to live, and this is how God calls us to act. And they were supposed to be the teachers of the people. They were supposed to be praying on behalf of the population, praying that God would accept their gifts, that accept their sacrifices, that they would be praying for the things that the people needed and that the nation needed. And since God was called the king of the people, and the people didn't have a king, and God didn't really desire for them to have a king because He was their king. Well, as their king, the priests were kind of a messengers from God. They were supposed to be the ones who could bring the messages that God had for the people to the people. And so the priests were supposed to represent the people to God and God to the people. The priests were also supposed to be offering the sacrifices, the sacrifices that the nation was supposed to bring to God, the daily sacrifices that reminded the people how much they were supposed to rely upon God for everything, as they were to bring the morning sacrifice and the evening sacrifice every day. And then you had the monthly sacrifices, the new moon sacrifice that was supposed to be brought to remind the people of God's care and concern. And then there were the yearly sacrifices that were supposed to be offered leading up to, and especially the sacrifice for the nation on the Day of Atonement. And it was the job of the priests to represent the nation before God in the offering of these sacrifices. To represent the people before God and to ask God for His mercy and His grace. And then there were the sacrifices that the individuals would make, whether it was the sin offerings that they themselves would bring when they had fallen short of God's requirement, or whether it was the offerings that they would bring in season as they brought the first fruits of the harvests, or the first fruits of their herds and their flocks that they were supposed to be bringing to God and offering up to Him, or just the occasional time when they would feel exceptionally blessed by God for some reason and they would bring the offering, the sacrifice of the offering. And each kind and each different one, the priests were supposed to know the purpose, and they were supposed to know the means of carrying out the particular sacrifices, whether it were the national or the individuals. And when the people brought the sacrifices, the priests were supposed to know how to handle each one. And with each one, there were requirements that were supposed to be carried out, and the priests were supposed to do those according to God's methods. But we see Eli's sons are quite different. You see, Eli's sons weren't representing God. No, they were rather representing themselves, and they were representing themselves very badly. If you read some of what we skipped over this morning, you find that as they were supposed to be doing things for God, they were rather creating their own set of rules and living by their own set of rules. They were offering the sacrifices, but they weren't listening to the ways God said that they were supposed to be. In fact, the NIV is kind of weak here, where it says that these men were scoundrels. Wicked men that many of our translations use comes a little closer. But the actual Hebrew says that they were sons of Belial. In other words, they were sons of the devil. They were sons of the enemy. They weren't being called sons of God or even sons of Eli by the writer of Samuel. He was representing how bad and how wicked they were by calling them sons of evil. They were wicked, wicked men. And so they clearly were not representing Yahweh. They were not representing Israel's God as they were leading the people as they were supposed to be God's representatives. In fact, they had begun to steal the sacrifices. If you read the book of Leviticus, you find that the first sacrifice, the first part of the sacrifice that was talked about was the fat. And all of the fat of the sacrifice belonged to God. Because, well, you know as I do, there is sometimes that fat just makes things taste better. Right? I mean, yeah, we don't want to eat too much of it, but a little bit, when you cook your steak, helps it to taste better. Especially if you grill it real good. You know, Well, the fat belonged to God. And the first part, that fat was supposed to be taken, and the first part of the offering, whatever offering was being offered, the first portion belonged to God. But yet, these two sons of Eli were coming and sending their servants to the worshipers, and they were demanding and threatening and stealing the offering. They were stealing the fat portions. Instead of allowing them to be burned and offered to God, they were taking some of the fat portions. And they were taking portions before the portions that were supposed to be God's were being offered. They were saying, "We want the first portion. We won't take anything else." And so they were stealing from God. They were taking what belonged to Him for themselves. And then they were stealing from the people, because not only were they taking the first portion, but they were taking as much as they wanted, as much as they desired, and it didn't matter what was supposed to be theirs. And Leviticus was very clear on the different sacrifices, how much belonged to the priest. How much the priests were supposed to get from each offering, depending on what kind it was. But the priests were saying, "No, we're just going to take whatever we want. We're going to take the best, we're going to take the first, and we're going to take as much as we want." And so they were stealing from God, and they were stealing from the people. It would be like if you went out to lunch today, and you go to a restaurant, and the server is bringing you your food, and as they set down your plate before you, they have another plate beside them, and they just start taking some of your food off of your plate. How many of you would go for that? Well, that's what these priests are doing to the people. And the people know the difference. The people seem to know better than the priests did. And what really strikes me is the fact that as you read this, you find that these boys really did not know God. They might have known a little bit about God. They might have known a little bit about His ways and what He was calling them to do. But they did not know God. Now, we don't know why. The writer of Samuel doesn't clearly tell us and say these boys were wicked and these boys didn't know God because, and give us a clear definition. But I think there's two things in the Scriptures that give us an idea. One is the fact that we see how far the nation has slid as you read through the book of Judges. You find out how dark and how bad things have gotten by the end of the period of Judges, and, well, these two priests are just another example of how far down the spiral has gone. But then I think chapter 3, verse 8, the second half of that, gives us the clue as to why these boys didn't know God. Because it says, "Then Eli discerned that Yahweh was calling the boy." Then Eli discerned. This is after Yahweh has already called out to Samuel twice. This is the third time that Samuel is coming in to Eli and saying, "You called me, what do you want?" Then Eli discerned. You see, Eli had gotten to the point where he didn't know God himself. And if Eli didn't know God, he couldn't pass that information on to his boys. He couldn't help them to see what it was that they were supposed to know, because he didn't know it himself. That says something sad about the nation of Israel. That here we have the priests, the leaders of the people, who do not even know God. But before we get too hard on them, we have to remember that we live in a society that sometimes isn't much better. You know, Paul wrote to Timothy, and he warned Timothy that a day was coming when people would seek ministers who would teach what their itching ears wanted to hear. That they would look for people that would tell them whatever it was that made them feel good. And if I look around society today, what I see is a lot of people who have their ears being tickled. And we have to be careful that we don't fall into the same trap, that we don't come to the same place where we simply want to have our ears tickled. Because sometimes I, as a minister, am called to speak things for God that maybe I don't even want to hear. To say things that are difficult and challenge what we believe as individuals. Or you look around and you see about ministers who are abusing their flock. You read about ministers who've taken advantage of young children, sometimes for decades before somebody has the audacity to call them out. You look at churches that have ministers that have an affair with a member. You look at churches where the ministers and leaders live luxurious life and have inexplicable expenses. You see, we live in a society where it's easy for us to fall into the same trap, where we live like the world. And in fact, there are some times when you look at those who are supposed to be leading the church, and they look, well, their lives are sometimes worse than the lives of those in the world, where they think they can get away with whatever they want because they're standing as the one who's supposed to be the representative of God. But then you also remember that Peter says that we're all to be a royal priesthood, a holy nation, that we're all called to be priests, and we have to remind ourselves that we're called to live by a higher standard. And it's easy for us to fall into some of those same gullies, those same traps. We're called to know God. But as bad as things had gotten, one of the things that we see throughout the pages of Scripture is no matter how bad things get, God always has a light. No matter how bad people get, God always has somebody who's holy. Not perfect. Nobody's perfect except for Jesus, but God always has somebody who He is waiting for the right moment to use, whose life is different. We have two bad apples that have been raised by Eli, and yet we have this young prophetic boy whose mother says, I'm going to set him aside to serve God in the temple all of his life. Actually, it would have been the tabernacle at that point, not the temple yet. This boy, this young boy, is named Samuel. And what we find is that Samuel has this prophetic relationship with God. And not just a prophetic relationship because he sees and he hears from God, but because he is called to live a life, and he is called to bring a message to the people, to call them back into relationship with him. And Samuel learns at a very early age to listen to and to hear the voice of God. Now, it doesn't tell us how old Samuel is. It says that he is a young boy, and we know that probably his mother brought him to the temple at around 3 years of age, when he would have been weaned, 3 or maybe 4, when he would have been finished being weaned and prepared to go, and he was brought to the tabernacle to live, and he spent his time there at the tabernacle, and at this point his job is to take care of the lamps. Day and night he would make sure that the lamps were taken care of so they would continually be burning before the presence of the Lord. He's offering a service at a young age to God at the tabernacle, and this particular night he's sleeping when he's awakened by somebody calling his name. Now, if somebody's calling your name in the middle of the night and you wake up and you're awake enough to understand what's going on, you're going to try to figure out why somebody's talking to you. Well, Samuel is at that point. He's hearing God speak to him and get his attention. And the fourth time, after Eli finally realizes that it's God talking to Samuel, Samuel begins this conversation with God. A conversation that's going to lead him to a lifetime of service as a prophetic messenger for God. Because he's learning to hear God speaking, and he's learning to listen to God, and he's learning at a young age to respond appropriately to God. And he's going to be God's representative to the people. Oh, Eli's sons were supposed to be, but it's going to be Samuel who becomes God's representative to the people. And for the rest of his life, he will be a representative who brings the messages of God to the people. And he's going to be one who represents the people to God. Though if you read through the book of 1 Samuel, and you're going to see that there comes a point when he doesn't want to represent the people to God. When the people begin to ask for a king, Samuel says, I don't want to do that for you. That is the wrong thing. You guys are going off track here. But he goes before God anyway. Because that's his job and that's his responsibility, is to live and let his actions represent God to the people and people to God, and his words are supposed to represent God to the people and the people to God. And Samuel, for the rest of his life, will carry out that task. But this particular night, this night that Samuel begins to learn to speak on behalf of God, he gets one of the most difficult tasks that anyone could be given. You see, God's first assignment for Samuel is to pronounce judgment on these two bad apples and their dad. He has a prophetic message that he doesn't want to deliver. It says that he wakes up in the morning and he goes about his business hoping that Eli will not ask him about what happened. He tries to put it behind him and forget about it, but he can't. He's called, first of all, to confirm the message of another prophet. In part of what we didn't read, another prophet comes and proclaims the judgment that will come against the house of Eli and against his two sons. Well, Samuel's message is a confirmation of what the other prophet said. And one of the things that you see in Scriptures, if you read Scriptures, is that when God says something twice, He really means it. Whether it was the prophecies that were given to Joseph, or the dreams that were given to Pharaoh, or the dreams that are later given to others throughout the Scriptures, you find that when God says something twice, it means that He has made up His mind and this is the way things are going to be. So Samuel is coming with the second message that is going to come to Eli about the judgment that's coming on his household. And Samuel is called to bring that second message. That message that says God has made up His mind and there's no changing His plans. And he was called to confront the man who was raising him. Imagine this, that you are called to confront. Maybe you're working and you're called by your boss to confront your manager and tell them that they're going to be fired because, well, they've been involved in some illegal activities. You're not sure it's your job or your place, but your boss is asking you to do it. Or maybe the FBI comes to you and tells you to go tell your boss that she's going to be arrested because of her illegal activities. Well, that's kind of the position that Samuel is in. It's like what we talk about, not biting the hand that feeds you. That's kind of what God was telling Samuel to do, except for God is saying, I'm really the hand that feeds you. Do you trust me? And Samuel hears God and he listens to God, and while he may not like the task, he follows through. And he takes that message to Eli. Whether Eli wants to hear it or not, Samuel proclaims everything and tells Eli everything that God had spoken to him. You see, and we're called to do the same thing. As a kingdom of priests, we're called to take a message. We're called to be God's representatives to the world. We're called to be a prophetic people. And the world doesn't like prophetic people. I know that to be the case. I know that if we really do what God calls us to do, that the world around us doesn't like it. You see, there's a lot of people in the world who will simply avoid church. They avoid church because they don't want to hear the message that God is sharing. There's people out there that avoid ministers. You know, that there are a lot of jobs, a lot of things you can tell people you'll do, and people say, oh, that's nice. Oh, that's nice. You sell insurance? Oh, that's nice. Oh, you fit bras? Oh, that's nice. You're a waitress? Oh, good. I'm glad somebody can bring us food. Oh, no, we don't want to talk to you. You know, people hear that you're a minister and they change their attitude because they don't like prophetic people. And you don't even have to say anything to them about what you believe or what you know to be the truth. They know their sinfulness and they don't want to hear the truth. The people don't really like preachy people. If you as a person living and working, going out into public, and you really live your life the way that God calls you to, and you speak the things that God calls you to speak, people don't like preachy people. You'll find that people will quit hanging around you if you speak the truth, because they don't want to hear it. And we can see it because the world around us makes fun of and belittles. Well, they make fun of and belittle the church. They make fun of and belittle preachers. They make fun and belittle people who are willing to live the life that God calls us to live. If people don't like the truth, they don't like prophetic people because it means they have to change. But yet we see a difference here. We live in a world where we like to see justice served, where we like to see the laws known and people from the top to bottom called to live according to those laws. And we as the people of God are given His Word, and we're told that we're supposed to live according to a standard that's higher than the world, to have goals and aims that are different from the world around us, that we're supposed to have a higher standard of morality, a higher standard for what is acceptable for entertainment and for the way we live our lives. You see, we're called to be a kingdom of priests, a holy nation, a people set apart for God. But do we live? Do we live like these two bad apples and, oh, maybe we're not as bad as they were, but we find entertainment in things that were as bad as they were? Or do we live like the prophetic kid who's being called to bring a message and live a life that's different? Called to bring a message that says that judgment is coming, and it will start with the house of the Lord. You see, I know that the world doesn't like to hear the truth, but sometimes the church doesn't like to hear the truth either. When I first started preaching as a young preacher, I was preaching at two churches. One of them was a restoration movement church like ours here this morning, and the other one was, well, it was a community church. And by community, I mean it, if you lived in the community and you were in some way attached to any form of religion, you went to that church because it was the community church. I think that there were 10 people that attended regularly and 12 different church backgrounds that were represented in that church. You figure it out. Well, one particular Sunday, I always preached the same messages at both churches. I didn't have the desire to preach two different sermons in the span of an hour. So I would preach the same sermon both places, and one particular Sunday morning I was preaching on baptism. Preaching what the Scriptures teach on baptism. And at the end of that service, one of the ladies came up to me and one of the only real complaints I've had as I've been preaching over the years, she said, I know that what the Scripture teaches, but that's not what we believe, and we don't want that preached here. And she said, I think that that you need to have the trustees look over all your sermons before you preach them from now on. She couldn't argue with the message. She couldn't argue with the scriptures, but that's not what she wanted to hear. You see, sometimes we in the church, we don't want to hear the truth. I'm not sure Eli and Hophni and Phinehas, you see why I just call them two bad apples and the boys, with names like Hophni and Phinehas, they didn't want to hear the truth. Israel didn't want to hear the truth because God was calling them to a different life than what they'd been living. Do you want to hear the truth? Or do you just want to be comfortable? Do you want to hear the truth and live by it? Or do you just want to live the life that you've been living and have somebody encourage you to keep going? When we're called to a relationship with God through His Son, we're called to live differently. And this morning, if you don't know Him as your Lord and Savior, if you've never said, I will live life differently, we're going to sing one more song, and I'd invite you to come and ask a question about what that looks like, begin a conversation of what it means to live differently and to live a life, well, honestly, that Jesus says is better. He says, I came that they may have life and have it to the full. See, the world tells you that you'll get your complete life out of the way they live. But Jesus says that life wasn't meant to be lived that way. Meant to be lived different. Let's stand together as we sing this morning.